Just when you thought it was safe to take down your jack-o'-lantern, the spooky season returns. But not just any spookum, a genre-defining one. Because two horror fans, and the occasional special guest, refuse to let evil die tonight. Welcome to the Apocalypse Video Halloween Retrospective. I am your slightly less creepy narrator, David Snyder. It's Halloween, and that can mean only one thing. It's time to re-reboot an aging horror franchise again. It's Halloween 2018.
Testing 1, 2, 3. We're on.
We're here to investigate a patient that killed 3 innocent teenagers on a Halloween in 1978. He was shot by his own psychiatrist and taken into custody that night, and has spent the last 40 years in captivity. Hello, Michael. I have something you might like to see.
Everyone in my family like turns into a nutcase this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, your grandmother is Laurie Strode. She was almost murdered.
Wasn't it her brother who murdered all those babysitters?
No, it was not her brother. That's something that people made up.
Do you know that I pray every night that he would escape?
What the hell did you do that for?
So I can kill him.
Dad, look out!
The bus crashed.
Mom, what bus crashed?
Michael escaped.
Excuse me, somebody's in here.
Hello?
He's waited for this night. He's waited for me. I've waited for him.
Get out the room! Get inside!
You don't believe in the boogeyman?
He's here!
Michael!
You should.
Can you close the closet door?
Hello and welcome to another installment of the Apocalypse Radio Halloween Retrospective. I'm your host, Dave, and Michael is back for another bite at the jack-o'-lantern. But is this another... I'll just leave it at that. The jack-o'-lantern bit.
Is he still evil?
We'll find out. But has old age mellowed out, Michael? We'll see. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by Nicholas and Martin. Oof!
I'm just as evil.
Okay. It took a long time for us to get here, but we are finally in the David Gordon Green, Danny McBride Halloween trilogy, remake, reboot, whatever. I was particularly interested to get to these movies because general consensus is this one was like a revival, a return to form to series. It was a huge hit. This movie only cost $10 million to make. It made almost $260 million worldwide. Huge hit. Pretty well loved, despite some controversial things, which we'll get into. And then the next two movies are very controversial, very disliked, which from my point of view... being friends with Nick as I am, I know that he usually tends to go to bat for the ones that nobody liked, so I was very excited to get to these three movies. And we'll get right into it. Nick, what'd you think? If you were an emperor, if you were a Caesar, would you give a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Oh, this movie would go to the executioner's block. if I'm like that, it's that kind of a judgment call.
So you're saying if this movie were lying on the ground face up and you were looking down on it, you would squish its head like a jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah, and then I would make, in my movie, it would be a reverse shot of the head being built after my foot squish.
Okay, I can't wait to dissect this. Because, truth be told, we watched this together, audience, and I could see out of the corner of my eye, there were moments when I felt Nick crossing his arms like, what the fuck is this? And I couldn't wait to talk about it. Okay, you didn't like it? I'll say this. I did like it. I liked this movie when it came out. I saw it. I too thought it was a return to form after several bleh or downright awful sequels. I can't wait. I feel like I'm Laurie and you're Michael. Let's fight.
Have you've been waiting for the showdown for 40 years?
I've been waiting for the showdown. I have my mannequin surrounding me. I got my gun, which is good. It's got stopping power. You know what I'm saying? But, okay, well, before we get into everything we liked and didn't like, let's start off with the synopsis.
Well, so, do you want to open up the chamber to the secret lair downstairs first, or do you want to...
Yeah, let's do it. And while you're down there, could you get me a can of preserves?
Sure, let me just look around here.
Thanks. So... this is one of those sequels. Again, I think we've said this before. The Halloween franchise has got to be the most fucked up, convoluted series in film history. Do you think that's fair to say?
I mean, I think it's up there. Don't all the horror films like Friday the 13th kind of rival the convolutedness as long the more movies
well, I
you
guess
go.
I guess what I mean is, like, is there any other film series that has started, restarted, we're gonna do a sequel to this set of movies but not this set of movies? Like, this is the second time they've done
how many
this.
Timelines are there?
Yes, I remember seeing this in theaters, and literally, or maybe it was Halloween Kills, it was one of them, but anyway, they literally made a timeline of the Halloween franchise, and there was like three or four different timelines, and then like off to the side, you see like reboot timelines with Rob Zombie, and I'm just like, what a mess.
Yeah, I mean, you really, it's funny, at this point, you don't really know what you're going to get each time.
Yeah.
It's like in terms of where it's connected to.
Well, and I think, and I'm like, honestly, it's not, I don't think it's a bad idea to show the audience a timeline because, again, as I said, this follows a series of films that were a sequel to Halloween, the original Halloween 2, but not 3 through whatever. This one also does that. We're making a sequel to the original, but we're ignoring all the other sequels. It's almost like they need a disclaimer before the movie starts. Like, attention, this is a sequel to the original 1978 Halloween. None of the other movies matter. Thank you for watching.
I guess it's just kind of generally recognized that the first one is like where everything starts. It all begins with the first one. So
yeah.
It all traces back to that one night.
It all traces back to that one night. And here we are 40 years later where it's Smith's. I feel like Forrest Gump. So the movie opens in Smith's Grove Sanitarium again. And I'm talking to Michael Myers again.
Or like the Arrested Development narrator. Like, they thought Michael was cured. He was not.
Yeah. He thought Michael didn't see them walking into the sanitarium. He did.
they thought he was going to be successfully transferred. He wasn't.
He wasn't. And we'll get to why he wasn't. But hey, we open up in Smith's Grove, and Here's where my first positive for this movie. I think it's well made. I think there's like intentional, you know, there's intentionality here. There's good shots. I think they make this sanitarium effectively creepy. Like we were watching this with like DTS:X, you know, overhead surround and stuff, and like you hear like whispers and people talking and alarms going off in the sanitarium. Like it's very effective, and I think they make my. I will say this. I think the best thing that this movie does. I think it's the right instinct, is to make Michael Myers the shape again. They remove all the motivation that came about in the sequels, and they just make him an element of force again. I don't know. Where do you fall on, I guess before we finish off the synopsis, do you think Michael is scary in this? Did they bring him back to what he was?
No, I don't think so. It's like, I think... I didn't have as much of a visceral reaction to this movie, aside from one little thing that I really hated. But
when the guy gets peanut butter in his penis.
Oh, mother! Oh man, I got peanut butter on my penis.
Ew, Dad. Instant karma.
No, I think just laying my cards on the table is just like I thought this movie was like pretty lukewarm. It was just very inoffensive. So it's just kind of moving forward. It's just like, and Michael's just doing Michael things, and creepy thing is creepy. It's okay to be formulaic, but there was nothing stylistically unique to me about this movie.
Well, I guess I don't mean that it's doing anything like it's not like there's any Brian De Palma split diopter shots, you know, nothing like that. I guess I just mean it's here's the thing. It's a low bar because we've had some pretty crappy movies in this franchise that were not well made. Halloween 5 and Halloween Resurrection. I could go on.
Well, it's just like I think for Michael's character, for example, I mean, like I said, I didn't hate this movie. I don't think there's that Michael was, there were a couple kills, but there wasn't anything that I can remember Michael doing where it's like, I don't know, it really shook me. I think maybe like the boot stomp kind of thing, but.
Yeah, he really does turn a guy's head into a melon and then
But that was the other thing. The violence, even that felt to me like inconsistent in terms of what it was going to show us and not show us. Kind of thing, and so it was just, and it felt kind of scattered. So I thought, like, and I wasn't. There was one point in the movie, and maybe I was just being extra critical, but where towards the end, spoilers, where the young girl is running outside, and they're also running from Michael inside. And to me, it was a very confusing scene because we're supposed to be scared for both of them, but as crazy as Michael is, he's not going to be in two places. And I don't know.
Yeah, I know a scene you mean, and it stood out to me as well. She escapes Michael, and she's running to Lori's fortified house in the woods. But Michael was already at the house, like, stalking Lori in the house. So that felt like that scene was, like, incorrectly placed in the timeline when they were editing the movie.
Okay, so you saw that, too, because that, and so, anyways, although it's going back to Michael.
It came too late. That should have been earlier.
I think there wasn't enough of Michael doing Michael stuff. Like, I think, the one thing that I think was great was when he escaped from when he crushed the guy from the behind in the car gate thing. Like, that showed his, like, real strength. But I didn't feel like we got a lot of examples of even his kind of behemoth kind of strength entity kind of thing. So I get that they kind of built his presence in a very shadowy way at the prison. But in terms of him doing Michael, like, Michael stuff, I don't know. He wasn't too much of a Michael for me.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. So going back to the beginning and the synopsis, like, this movie does everything it can to build up Michael Myers. He gets a build up like Godzilla or something. You know what I mean? Like, they're talking about him. He has a new doctor, Dr. Sartain, who's obsessed with Michael Myers. He's like, only one person saw him in the wild, Dr. Loomis, and all he had to say was that he was pure evil. Can you believe that shit? What a quack. I'm going to get to the root of this, true crime podcasters. And that's another thing that really sets this movie.
Oh my God. That did not age well, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Like, you get these true crime which it's of its time. I'll give it that. You get these true crime podcasters coming in to talk to Dr. Sartain. They want to talk to Michael Myers. He's their late. They've been dragging the bottom of the barrel. It's like, well, there was a guy that dressed up in Halloween and killed some people like 40 years ago. What if we do that as our next story? It's like, okay, great. We got to beat Serial. It's kicking our ass in the ratings or in the podcast charts, whatever. So they go in to interview him. This guy, I love this. This guy somehow was able to talk to a quote-unquote friend in the Attorney General's office to grab, to get Michael's mask, his 40-year-old mask. He's like, come on, Michael. He's like waggling it like car keys to a dog. He's like, come on, do you feel it? And you know, the entire sanitarium goes crazy. And again, just like, they're really amping up Michael as like pure evil. He's just standing there not saying anything. And then cut to credits, and you know, we get, as Nick alluded to earlier, the the mound of crushed jack-o'-lantern that reforms into the classic Halloween opening credits. But like I said, I did have the thought in this opening sequence they're going a little overboard. It's a bit much, but I just appreciate that they forego the motivation that he's just pure evil. But at the same time, as you mention it, now I'm kind of torn, Nick. You got me.
You don't need to.
You got me, like, questioning myself.
I think as I'm hearing you talk about it, and I think one thing that we didn't get to yet, which is because it's not in the story yet, but Laurie's character. Mm. I think this movie drops a lot of breadcrumbs, but it doesn't pick any of them up. Like, I think even the backstory with Laurie and her daughter kind of thing, like, really it comes to fruition, spoilers, when she's able to successfully shoot this gun one time. Like, I don't know, they drop all these, like, the, oh, because she was raised in like this kind of feral survivalist environment, but yeah, it really doesn't guns. Come so and I and then there's the teen aspect. They've got some storylines there, but like for example, if you're just going to compare it to the original, like, Michael didn't do any, there was like one moment of stalking when he sees them at the cemetery. He's hanging out, creeping on them, you know, watching. He's like,
well, yeah, I was gonna say, like, I'm kind of torn because, as you mentioned, like, what made the first one scary was the stalking. That was kind of Michael Myers' bread and butter, was stalking. That's how, as we theorized in the previous episodes, that's how he gets his superpowers, is he stalks. It charges up his power meeting, power meter. But yeah, this one kind of has it both ways. Like, it, and it's like, I kind of understand it. Like, he's out and free after 40 years. He kills the podcasters in the bathroom in a scene that is like, taking a lot from Halloween H2O. Remember that bathroom scene?
Not
where the mom is in the bathroom stall.
Yes,
and Michael
yes,
walks
yes. Actually, yes,
that,
yes.
That was another note I had as a knock against this movie. I think it leans too heavily into fan service and referencing past movies. Like, there's so many Easter eggs in this movie.
I mean, even I was. I mean, I'm not that very good at that stuff. But even there were a couple of like this that I saw, and I'm like, you're just. I don't know. Well,
And like that school scene where it's like, okay, class, you're in the fate section now. We're going to talk about fate. We're going to reuse the same shots from the previous movie, but we're going to flip them because we're meta.
Now let's open our books to Frankl's interpretation. He said, fate took a different course. I understand how someone who has nothing left in this world may still know bliss.
His message is totally hopeful. Even in the most disparaging of conditions, life can find its meaning, and conversely, so can one suffer.
It's all homage, but no even like stylistic twists. Like, I can't really think of anything this movie did that was different. Like, anything.
Well, It flips it at the end when Michael is stalking Laurie and she falls off the balcony and he looks down and she's gone.
Well, that's more of an Easter egg than anything to me. It's
that's
like,
true.
Oh,
get
it? She did that back to him.
Well, it's like now he's the hunted and she's the hunter.
Yeah.
And man, the bathroom kill. Also, there's a shot of laundry for no reason. Like, like in the middle of the movie in the neighborhood, it just shows laundry. It's not. He's not even in it. It's just like, remember the laundry?
It's enough. Because they heard you and they were like, this guy is remarkably impressed by Michael's ability to clean up his crime scenes. You know.
Yeah, that was foreshadowing. He was going to use that laundry to clean up later.
It was just another homage.
But it's kind of, it's interesting. Yeah. So he kills we're jumping all around here. So he escapes. There's a bus crash. He escapes. He kills a kid and his dad, follows or goes to town, kills the podcasters, gets his mask back. And this is the scene I wanted to get to when he's in the neighborhood and there's like 100 kids running around and then like they bump into him and he's just sort of looking around. And I remember at the time, I kind of liked this because it's almost like there's so many options for Michael at this moment. Like he doesn't, because it's interesting kind of the way that they show it, because he's literally like darting his head around like a dog. He's like, he doesn't know who to kill or who to stalk. It's like he's overstimulated. You know what I mean? And it seems, it's almost like a video game. He's like, first he has to upgrade his weapons. So he goes into this house, kills a lady who looks just like the old lady in Halloween 2 at the beginning of the movie, kills her with a hammer, then he gets a knife, then he walks around some more, he looks at the menu, he's like, let me look around, let me get a little bit of stalking in, he sees this lady in the house, okay, I'll kill her, goes inside in one long tracking shot, goes into her house, kills her, walks back outside. It's just like, I'm torn though, because I like that it's just random, there's no motive, he's just kind of killing random people, and just walking off on his own. But at the same time, you need that stalking, like you said. And I think like the really, really the only true effective stalking in the movie is the scene in the house with the girl who's babysitting the kid. And then later in the backyard with like the automatic motion lights. Like that's the only two stalking scenes we get. And they're really good.
The strobe light effect, or the garden scene where they kind of have the security lights, that was kind of creepy too, but I don't think it has a lot of momentum behind it.
Well, it's just like you said, those are the only kind of real stalking scenes we get in the movie, and it's like that's all that Halloween was. So it's kind of, I'm kind of torn, because like I said, I kind of like that the randomness, it plays into the no motivation, but at the same time, Michael's all about,
but I don't understand that. Okay, so he either has a motivation or he doesn't. And if he does,
I don't think. Well, you know what? This movie tries to have its cake and eat it too, because it's like, well, I don't know. I think Dr. Sartain keeps saying like he's convinced that there is a motivation. He's like spoiler alert, Dr. Sartain or the new Loomis orchestrates the whole prison breakout. He causes the crash because he wants to see Michael in the wild, as he says. And he wants to like bring Michael and Laurie together to see what happens. But that doesn't happen unless he brings Michael to Laurie. I think I don't know. I think what the movie was trying to do was like Michael would have just walked on killing. Like he wasn't looking for Laurie. He wouldn't have met them unless Dr. Sartain brought Michael to them.
I don't think. That's not what I got from the movie, because it seems like Michael is still hunting Laurie to some, like they have some relationship because they like,
but he walks away when she shoots him, when like in the middle of the movie, when she shoots him, he's walking away from her.
But why would he be at that place anyways? To begin with her house.
No, I mean earlier when he's stalking like the babysitter and the kid, and he kills the babysitter, and Laurie hears like the domestic disturbance on the radio. She hightails it over to that house, shoots Michael. He walks off.
Remember? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. There were two. Didn't we say at the end there were two? So that's another thing you can throw on the poster, I guess. But what was the other one?
Oh, well, the other one is that I didn't know when you wanted to get to this, but Dave said something that must be said. Like, he described my feelings, and it's about Dr. Sartain's turn. And yeah. I kind of said that, you know what? This is like, yeah, it's goofy or strange or different or whatever, but it doesn't matter if it happened in 2018 or 1994. Like, and this is Dave's line, dumb is dumb. Like, it's just. Doesn't matter when this movie came out, like it's just so silly.
Well, that's the big controversial thing with this movie. Like I said before, the general consensus is that most people like it, but this is the one sticking point a lot of people who didn't like it had, and even people who did like it for that matter. Dr. Sartain's turn he is like, and I think we've talked about this before, like, wouldn't it have been interesting if, like, at some point in the other sequels, Loomis went crazy? I think we mentioned that, like, he tries to orchestrate Michael's escape at some point, or to force a confrontation. I feel like we brought that up in the past. But maybe the difference there is, like, we've had some time.
Well, it's unearned. That's why I don't like this, because it's not, I'm not opposed to this happening, just to be clear.
Because we were with Loomis for multiple movies before.
Not only were we with Loomis, but we got to know Loomis. Like, in this movie, we only get one scene with Dr. Sartain before the transfer scene, and then he escapes. So it was just totally inexplicable that he has this conversion where, I guess it now that you kind of explained it, you know, that this was like a forethought out process, but in the moment it seems very inexplicable. Like, he just randomly converts to wanting to see Michael in the wild.
I'm trying to think in retrospect to the one scene, because we're introduced to him in the beginning of the movie. He kicks off the movie in the sanitarium. He's kind of lamenting to these podcasters that Michael's being transferred to, like, as he describes it, the pit of hell. As he's like, I want to learn more from him. Like, it seems more academic than crazy in the beginning.
Michael has been my life's obsession. I've examined every single case file written on him. I was a student of Dr. Loomis before he passed away. And then I lobbied the University of Illinois to be assigned to Michael myself.
Any progress?
Well, he's been seen by over 50 clinical psychiatrists, and with each, many different opinions. Dr. Loomis was the only one to see him in the wild, and he concluded he was nothing more than pure evil.
Our patients get fresh air, sunshine, a view, proper exercise, healthy diet. It pains me to see him transferred to that less than desirable facility. And there he is.
Well, in the beginning, like, his concerns, at least the way he expresses it to the podcasters, was that, you know, he cares for Michael's well-being.
Yeah.
And then he turns and then the other thing, like, even related to the crash, I thought that scene with the boy and the gun was so, like, dumb. Like, I don't like giving this, the whole orchestration of the kid with the gun showing the irresponsibility of it and him shooting Dr. Sartain, and that doesn't really add up to anything because he survives.
I guess this might be one of those things. It's a horror movie, like when you're screaming at a horror movie, don't do the thing, but it's like, you see a bus crashed off to the side of the road, and I feel like it's pretty clear that it's like some sort of like prison bus or something akin to that. And you see a bunch of people like meandering about in the middle of the road. I don't know. What do you do here, Nick? Do you go out and investigate, or do you like try to call some help and leave? I don't know.
Just walking zombies. I think you said something. You said had tried to have its cake and eat it too, and I think that's what I was kind of alluding to with dropping all these breadcrumbs and not picking any of them up, kind of thing. And it's just, I think there's a lot of scattered stuff. It's very, and that's why I was saying, like, the movie is very serviceable before the doctor switch. Like, it's just kind of moving along, checking the horror boxes, so it's just very formulaic and everything like that. So it's just fine, you know. It's good. Like, okay, so people are dying, he's hunting, blah blah blah. You know, it's just checking all the boxes.
And there are some positives, like, you know. So prior to Sartain having his heel turn, like we mentioned, I think we both liked the babysitter and the kid. Like that scene when he's like, "Oh, the kid is talking about
your movie."
I agree. Best part of the movie, best two characters. I was actually, this might be a first in the Halloween franchise, but I was actually sad when the babysitter got killed.
Well, that's the thing. Those two, the babysitter and the kid are the only characters that I felt like I even got to know.
Yeah.
Okay, bye. Love you.
I heard you telling your friends to come over here and you're going to smoke some weed.
No.
The Alakazam?
Julian, I'm talking about like a... You know, like a magic trick, like abracadabra.
I know you're talking about smoking weed. Don't lie to me. That's against the rules. I'm telling my mom.
Well, I'm going to tell your mom about your browser history.
You better not.
You can get me in trouble. I can get you in trouble. He used to be my favorite, but now you're like my 10th favorite boy that I nanny.
And I babysit some fucking loser kids.
If I had some other kind of babysitter, she'd be reading me a story. I wouldn't be up clipping my nasty ass toenails.
Uh-huh. Go to bed.
You used to be cool. We used to be friends, but now...
You don't
want to
look
in. Okay. Come on, go to bed. It's way past your bedtime. You want to be a good kid?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you get paid? Go to bed. Come on, let's go. Let's go. I'll get you. Come on.
You get a backstory. You get a real, like, of them. Like, she's not maybe the greatest babysitters. Like, I know you're coming over to smoke weed. I know what abracadabra means. He's like, I'm over. I love that line where he's like, I'm over here, like, trimming my, like, nasty ass toenails, like, on the couch.
He's so
that kid was so funny. And it just, like, and also you get a sense that they really care about each other. They may bicker at times, but, like, they care about each other, which makes the stalking scene great because you're like, it's tense now. Like, oh, God. Like, I know Michael is in the room with him, you know?
That was, as I reflect, because yeah, I was so, that's a very frustrating thing for me about the movie too, was just the lack of personality to any of these characters. But that was the one moment where I felt like the dialogue was in service of anything other than just moving the plot forward. It was just like, hey, let's just hang out for 5 seconds.
And just stay with these characters for a bit.
Yeah, because even like you have the main teens, the three teens, like, not, they never, like, even their joking around was, I don't know, just, it felt like just moving the plot forward, like, oh, we got to make sure we drop these breadcrumbs of, talking about the murder, and then this kid makes a joke.
Oh, they're not actually brother-sister. We're ignoring that timeline.
Yeah, it's just like, that doesn't count anymore. It's just like, only one, like, this one moment with this babysitter and the kid was like, oh, let's just have some human interaction for once.
Yeah, it's not explaining plot or anything like that. It's just so it's a bummer when the babysitter dies, and I think that scene is well set up where he's like, there was a guy in my bedroom, he was just standing there, I gotta knock the babysitter for not checking the closet. What the hell, babysitter? God, that's the first place you check.
Was like, she went in my head, I guess if I was in that situation, I would just still look like to
placate, you know, the kid.
Because she did that fake, like, attack thing, she was like, she's in there for all that time. At least just look in there.
Yeah, look under the... You do the main checkpoints when you're trying to calm a kid down from having a scary dream. You look under the bed. You check the closet. You know what I mean? You check the window curtains, or whatever. But she did none of that. Granted, she was maybe a little high and she was horny, but, you know... come on, how long does it take to check under the bed and check the closet? Anyway... So what did you think about, are those like the only kind of characters you got behind? Like the trauma wasn't getting to you with Lori and her estranged daughter?
Are you serious? I don't want to. Okay. So I know that you and I, part ways on the Rob Zombie Halloweens, especially 2.
No, I like 2.
Well, okay. So I thought that, so that is the movie that's the Halloween movie that deals with trauma. I guess on paper it does, but
well, this is like, what if she deals with trauma by being like Sarah Connor and like shooting stuff and she's a badass?
And she was also a bad mom that, you know, God,
I think another thing that hurts it is that we've seen this tried before with Jamie Lee Curtis and not well.
It's very frustrating. I think that's another thing. I get frustrated as I talk about it because I think there's some moments like when the dinner scene where Jamie Lee Curtis comes and she's kind of drunk and everything like that. Again, that's a perfect moment where it was just felt like it was just in service of, let's just explain these beats so we can get to the next scene. Where it's just like, dude, she's... Think about her character.
Yeah. I mean, there are some moments like when she breaks down, she's trying to talk and she just keeps like crying and they're like, and you hear like people muttering like in the back, like, I told you this wouldn't work. Like, why does she do this? You know what I mean? Like, that's stuff you could expand on a bit more. But as you said, yeah, it does kind of just cut to the next scene. I don't know. Yeah, you're kind of changing me a little bit on this. Like my enthusiasm is draining a little bit. For the movie. I think you're kind of turning me here, Nick. It's just, It's tough when we've seen these same beats before from the same actress in the same franchise. It doesn't hit.
Another thing, okay, so I don't know. This is contextual, obviously, because the last one that we watched together, and the last one I just watched period, was the Rob Zombie Halloween 2, and I really like that. And I would argue that's a movie that has some substance behind it.
And you really get inside the character's head in that second movie.
Very much. And that's like totally like this, like, this is a total flip of that. And so I can get why that can be appreciated, because that, you know, the Halloween 2 Rob Zombies is very dour, very bleak. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, this is like, it's not nihilistic. This was just fun. You know, it's for the kids, you know, like, and you know,
well, it's kind of like, yeah, like the most we see of her trauma is we see her crying a few times. She ruins like a graduation party or something like that, some celebration before a Halloween event. And she's estranged from her daughter, but we only see like a brief glimpse of it in a flashback. Whereas in Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, this character is fucked in the head. Like, she's having hallucinations. You know what I mean? She lives with her friend because her parents are killed.
I don't mean to try to rewrite this movie, but I'm just saying that I think, actually, this movie could have gotten a huge boon by removing Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter and only having the granddaughter and grandma as a relationship, because to me, as I reflect on it, that relationship was a triangle that was spread out so thin. So you're trying to spread out this trauma between three characters, which is there, because that, as I reflect, it's like, yeah, we got a number of mentions from the granddaughter, how, like, did you tell grandma, did you reach out to grandma, blah blah blah, you know, over and over again. So you know that toll is being taken on her. And I feel like if you had just had, and you even have one scene between them, which was, as I remember, was actually pretty good. It's like where she's like giving him the $3,000 or whatever.
Oh, just live, like, fuck college, like, have experiences. Yeah,
that kind of, and actually, you know what? That is a good moment. So right there too, another character moment. But yeah, it's just like, I think it spreads itself too thin across too many characters. And we really didn't have that any kind of, like you said, we don't care when the characters are killed at all. Aside from like the babysitter.
I also feel like I usually like her, but Judy Greer in this movie, the way she's playing it, I don't remember what it says what she does. Like, you get a sense that she's like maybe a psychiatrist too, or she's like, no, she's too, like, she's taking too many Ambien or something in this movie. Like, no, like, you gotta let go of your past and this and that. Like, I don't think Judy Greer's great in this movie. I usually like her. I don't think she's great in this movie. And her turn at the end, I don't know, where she's just like, haha, gotcha, I've been training for this my whole life. Like, I feel like she should have, like, I think we're getting at something, Nick. Like, we needed more scenes of this trio, the Lori, her daughter, and her granddaughter. Like, you needed more to build that up. Maybe not as much with the podcasters, you know what I mean? Like,
You know what? You could have had even, oh man,
you might, you know, honestly, you didn't need the podcasters. Get the podcasters out of there. Well,
seriously, think back on that. The podcasters did nothing. Like, they didn't even the money that they gave to Jamie Lee Curtis wasn't like the catalyst for anything, was it?
Well, imagine if the movie started with, it's the day before Michael's getting transferred, and I don't know, like, Lori goes to see him or something like that as some sort of catharsis. Maybe like her daughter's like, let go of the demon, go see him, let him, you know, whatever. I don't know. Like, what if it opened with that? Like, I don't, yeah, in retrospect, like, you don't need the podcasters. Get him out of there. You could have opened with Dr. Sartain. Oh, here we go. You could have had Dr. Sartain talking to Michael. It could have been like his last session before he's sent to whatever the hell on earth place is. And then you could build up Sartain in that moment. You could have Sartain talking about Lori. You could have him like, what about Lori, Michael? You know, this, that, and the other thing. You could build there. But instead, we get these fucking of the moment true crime pod. You're really making me hate these podcasters, Nick.
Well, they certainly, to me, don't add anything to the movie. No. And they're as you just rightly explained, and I think what I believe is the true problem of this movie is that there's kind of too many characters almost that they give names to, and essentially, you know, and And so it spreads out the attention. And really, I think it takes away from the two main cores that we're supposed to care about. One is Michael, because he's the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And two is the family unit of the grandma, mom, and granddaughter. And I think we're too spread out between them.
No, I agree. Ditch the podcasters. You can open with Sartain. That's one thing I've liked about all these Halloween movies is whenever you have a psychiatrist trying to talk to Michael. You know what I mean? That is creepy. Oh. Trying to get to Michael. Like, that is fun stuff. Open the movie with Sartain. Build up his character. Maybe throw in a little hint of menace with Sartain so it's not completely out of the blue when he turns later.
But I had a question for you, Dave, because I don't know. I really wasn't paying attention to this franchise when this movie came out, but when this came out, was it known that it was supposed to be a trilogy?
No, they didn't know if they were gonna make two more movies. Like, they had an idea. They're like, we can maybe go this way, but let's end it in a way that's somewhat ambiguous. Like, let's end it in a way that could go either way. If the movie's not successful, that's just the end. He died in the fire. If it is, we'll have a couple of shots where, because in the end, they trap Michael in the bottom basement thing in the house, and they incinerate the house, and you see him as they leave just standing there creepily in the stairwell going down to the basement as the fire engulfs him. Then they cut back to that later, and he's not standing there. You know what I mean? You just see this empty basement with flames. So it's like, I think they were pretty much greenlit like right after this movie came out, because this movie was, as I said, a huge success. Like, if you don't adjust for inflation, it's the highest grossing slasher film ever made.
Wow.
Yeah. So to answer your question, not originally. They didn't originally know if they were going to make a trilogy. They were kind of like playing it by ear.
Because I was wondering as we're talking and I'm, you know, complaining about all this stuff, is like, maybe that stuff was written in that way because they were kind of banking on more time to explain different things in the future. So I didn't know if that was true or not.
Which I don't think is good filmmaking.
Certainly wouldn't be a good thing, but it would at least explain why, like, you know, they were just, because maybe, like, I don't know, they're bringing back the podcaster's family in the second one or something like that. Because, oh, the thing I was thinking about is, because I think I heard something about the second one. I don't really know too much about the other ones, but like the kind of mass hysteria kind of thing is a big element in the second one.
Evil Dies Tonight.
I was wondering if that had to do with the girl, the granddaughter's boyfriend, because like that was another thing about the move in the up, like the small plot points. It was like, okay, her boyfriend dad is like a problematic character, and her dad like knows about him, or they used to hang out. So again, there was this element of like, I think I'm supposed to care about this, but why?
Well, the character's dad is Lonnie, and if you recall from the original Halloween, Lonnie's the kid that bullies the babysitting kid in the beginning of the movie. He's the one that like pushes him and breaks his jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, wow.
He's also the one that Loomis yells at when they try to walk into the haunted house, the spook house, Michael Myers' house, and Loomis has that line, "Lonnie, get your ass away from there."
Oh, I love that line.
So more fan service, basically. They're like, who could we mine from the original movie to come back, you know, which we'll get into in the next movie, believe me, Nick. They will mine everything from the original movie that they possibly can. I wouldn't be surprised if they bring back those like weird comic books that Tommy was reading, like Tarantula Man makes an appearance.
Or the mask,
yeah. Yeah, they bring back all the bad masks from the sequels that look terrible. But let me check my notes here, because we've kind of covered most of this stuff. Like, one of the big talking points was Dr. Sartain and his turn.
So you said how you feel about that.
Well, here, you know, as we discuss it more, yeah, I think the big problem with it is that it comes out of nowhere. It doesn't seem set up or earned. We only get one scene with him in the beginning. That could have been, I like it on paper. As we talked about in the past, we thought it could have been cool if Loomis eventually took that turn. So I like this turn on paper, and I appreciate that it's something different. You know what I mean? There's been so many Halloween sequels. Like, I appreciate that they at least tried something here. It may not go off perfectly, but I don't mind it, honestly. I understand why people don't like it.
I remember I was telling you the, like, I compared it to, like, and that's where the Dumb is Dumb quote came from, is because I compared it to, like, the change of, like, making Michael, like, subservient to magic stones. It was just, like, just kind of comes out of nowhere. It was never supposed to be that way kind of thing.
And it does kind of take the edge away from Michael a minute.
Yeah, certainly.
Because you get that scene, and I do think it was simultaneously funny and creepy when Dr. Sartain, like, there's a part of this that works, that could be good. Like, I like that Dr. Sartain, he stabs the sheriff after they run Michael over, and he just sort of stands there for a second. He's like, ah, that's how that feels. And then he takes Michael's mask off and puts it on, and he stands up in, like, the headlights of the car, and you see him wearing the mask. This could be good, but again, like, and again, I appreciate that they're doing something different, but you do bring up a good point, is that in a way, it does seem to kind of depower Michael. It doesn't nerf him, but it, like, takes the mystique away from him a little bit.
Well, okay, so this is kind of, like, extrapolating, but...
It almost makes him feel like a pawn.
Well, okay, so check this out. You sparked something that I forgot, but I forgot that Dr. Sartain actually puts the mask on.
Yeah.
So... In terms of, like, you've often made the point about what or who Michael is and his motivation or lack thereof and stuff like that. It does, to that ethos, the fact that Sartain put that mask on very much corrupts that idea that anything evil is actually about Michael. That is, it's actually, like, transferable almost, and it becomes kind of, like, magical in a sense, which, you know, well, goes back to the magic stones and all that stuff, but it definitely, it totally, like, the very, like, it, one thing that he killed, but I forgot he put that mask on, which is not a small thing. Like, that's not that's, like, a very, like, intentional thing that this guy is doing. So the evil is, you know, passable.
And which I think, if I recall, was kind of, maybe I'm misremembering this, but, like, when they were making Halloween 4, they approached John Carpenter, and one of his things was, like, his idea was, like, what if, like, this event from the first two movies, like, completely just ruined this town? You know what I mean? And it's basically left, like, a curse on this town, and it's, like, the essence of Michael has sort of permeated the town a little bit, and it's fucked up the town. Like, he I don't think he wanted to bring Michael back, but he was willing to go back to this setting. And, you know, what if, like, the presence of evil just, like, seeped into the soil, kind of?
Well, I think that's what Halloween 2 Zombies did, is because, if you remember, that's when, from going from 1 to 2, they changed the whole lens of the film to be so much more gray and bleaker.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have moments, again, you know, thinking, I can't help but contrast these two, because that one had so much meat under the bones. Like, when you have the parent of a murdered child, like... have an outburst at the book signing or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You have this example of a human, like, outburst, a human emotion, a felt trauma in the town. But here, yeah, I don't think, like, it goes back to the old way of, like, when you and I used to joke, like, they just made a joke out of Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah, Sartain. Again, I didn't mind it when I saw it. It did feel kind of like, oh, that's out of nowhere. But I don't know. I at least, even if it doesn't quite stick the landing, I appreciated that they try to do something different. Cause as you said, a lot of this movie does kind of feel by the numbers. Like, it's just more Halloween. He's more killing people, more stalking, you know, almost like there's only so much you could do with this, you know, premise.
Right. And I think that they, you know, you have to, if you're going to make a movie like this, that's, you know, formulaic, you have to, and you want it to be, I don't know, anything kind of special, you really have to add some kind of stylistic flavor. And that's where, like, to me, that's where the stalking comes in, because that's where you get to be truly creative about how you're going to position the guy in the frame, where, you know, the pacing. Like, so you have that example, which was pretty good, of the lights, the garden lights, which, you know, they flash on, they flash off. You have him talking to a shadow. You kind of have this sustained moment of suspense, all that stuff. But this movie doesn't do a whole lot of that. It just kind of just keeps trying to move from point A to point B. Is like, dude, I mean, I'm not trying to say make your movie 2 hours long, but take a breather and have some level of suspense.
I wonder if part of my enthusiasm for this movie was coming off, because I honestly, like, I remember really disliking the Rob Zombie movies when I initially saw them, almost to the point where I'm like, I didn't need to see those movies anymore. They had almost left my brain. So when I went into this movie in 2018, I was kind of more comparing it to, I don't know what timeline this would be. I was comparing it to all the pre-Rob Zombie Halloween movies and how those movies really dipped in quality the further they went along in both, you know, scares and filmmaking, in my opinion, very by the numbers at best. So maybe that might have been one thing I was responding to watching this, is that while it doesn't necessarily do anything crazy stylistically, it's competently made. And there are some good stalking scenes. So I wonder if it was just sort of like, well, this is better than what we had.
Yeah, and I kind of like... I kind of get that perspective, especially becoming...
Like grasping at straws a little bit.
Well, especially...
Well, I don't want to say that this is... I don't want to compare this to grasping at straws, but like it's just like clearly better than a lot of the other sequels, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's amazing.
Yeah, and I think especially if at the time, you know, you had a strong averse reaction to Rob Zombies, like I said, like this, regardless of what you think of either... I don't think anyone's going to say they're very similar. They're very, very different. So yeah. If you have one reaction to one and you come to the opposite, then yeah, of course. I think that I would say, like, regardless of how you feel about Rob Zombies 2 or Halloween 2, this is a palate cleanser. Like, this Halloween 2018, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally like, and that's why I was like, I think it is like a very... normal movie to me, aside from the big hiccup with the doctor, which is just like, it's just like, you know, a big blemish. Like, it's totally, it's just, it takes it from serviceable to stupid to me.
Well, it's also interesting too, because it is, it happens and then is resolved almost immediately, because he drives Lori he drives the daughter to Lori's house. And then it's like he immediately gets killed. it's not like he's like a force in the movie. Like, oh, there's a crazy doctor now. We got to deal with this. Like, no, it is set up and resolved within 5 minutes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, everything is just, how do you move the plot forward? And it's like, again, it's just very.
Do you think that maybe would have made it a little better in your mind if they had like played this out a bit more with this evil doctor?
If
he had been allowed to be evil doctor for a longer bit of the movie,
that could have at least made his shift impacting to the story. But he, like,
because he's immediately gone.
nothing has changed because of what he did, other than Michael's freedom. And that's just moving. That's just Michael is that's just in the plot outline that just says Michael escapes.
Do you think it would have been better if maybe he wasn't as overtly evil? Maybe he orchestrated this crash. And maybe he didn't mean to get people killed. He just wanted to see Michael in the wild. And then, like, he grows to regret it over the course of the film. Do you think that would have been better?
Anything would have been better, I think. you have, at this point, you have almost nothing. You just have...
It's another Halloween.
Yeah, it's just a Halloween. It's okay. So, I mean, it's definitely hitting those boxes. So, I mean, you kind of, I mean, with these horror franchises, depending on how you want to evaluate them, you know, if it's checking the boxes, it's good.
Nick, we have a way to evaluate them. I think you know what I'm about to say. You mentioned checks boxes. If I'm in McDonald's, and has presented me with Halloween 2018 as a food option, what box am I reaching for? Or am I reaching for a bag? Like, in terms of, am I reaching for a quarter pounder box? Am I reaching for a double cheeseburger bag? Like, what are you reaching for when you wrap up the mound of meat that is Halloween 2018?
Believe it or not, I've done quite some pondering about this.
I went to McDonald's. I tried various burgers.
I stared at the menu for 5 minutes. I looked up the nutrition.
And then the guy was like, say something.
You just held up the bag and I wasn't saying. It was the Michael situation. He was carrying the bag in front of me and I just wasn't moving. So I don't know the exact item. I've been debating, and it's like, I think it would be not so a double quarter pounder without cheese. Or actually,
it's getting the quarter pounder. No,
it would be a quarter pounder without cheese, but there would be like there's something rotten on it. Like you get like it's like you open it, they hawked a loogie on it. That's like it's a quarter pounder that you think is going to be like good, and this is because I eat way more than that. But so this is like a small decent sized burger. But it's sour, like it's something's wrong with it, you know. So the McDonald's workers hawked a loogie in it.
Oof!
And that loogie's name is Dr. Sartain.
Can I speak to your manager, please? Okay, Mr. Sartain, someone wants to complain about the burger you made.
And it's inexplicable too. There's no reason for it. It's like I didn't think I pissed the guy off, but he just spat in my food.
Well, I don't know, because again, I still like this movie, despite like you kind of turned me a bit, like you turned my meter down on the likability for this movie a bit. I would still give it like honestly, my Letterboxd rating would probably be like a 3.5 for this movie, which has gone down. I did rate it a bit higher, but like in retrospect, some of the things that didn't work about this movie kind of like are more apparent to me. They stand out a bit more on this rewatch, especially talking with you. So if I were doing Letterboxd, I would give it 3.5. But honestly, this might be the most difficult McDonald's scoring ever for me, because I still liked it, but oof. I think that might have gotten...
You're in a similar position, because I was like, what foundation do you give it? Because so that's why I'm like, okay, the foundation is good, fine. So a quarter pounder, you know? But something's wrong with it.
I'm gonna go a quarter pounder with cheese, but the cheese isn't melted. It's kind of like, you know, sometimes you get a quarter pounder and it's like, nah, the cheese isn't that great. It's a little cold, maybe, but it's still okay.
Maybe for you the burger is okay, but you also got a side of fries and the fries are not too good.
That's what it was. I liked the quarter pounder with cheese I got, but the fries were soggy. They were cold and soggy.
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Sartain, we have another complaint. Well, any other thoughts on Halloween 2018?
I'm very I'm very curious what's to come, considering what you said and like the critical reaction of the other ones, because I don't know, like maybe I'll be a defender again. I'll look forward to it.
It seems like the consensus is no one likes Halloween Kills, and most people don't like Halloween Ends, but there are some who are like, actually, it might be a good one. So we'll see. I'm curious. But when we return, we'll be it'll be 3 years later in real time, 2021, but in Halloween time, Halloween Kills takes place the same night.
Oh, another Easter egg. Isn't that just like Halloween?
Another Easter egg. We'll be back with another Halloween movie and another Easter egg with Halloween Kills.
Say something.